Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And man oh man, we hope you had a great holiday weekend, because I think it's fair to say we did, and we're looking forward to a brand new year. You know why? Because this year has been terrible for movies, and we're kind of hoping things look up next year.
Yes. If the world doesn't end.
Well, even if it does, we still get like 11 and a half months of movies.
Oh, so that's right.
What are the odds that a really good horror movie is going to come out in the last 2 weeks of December?
I don't know.
I just think it's pretty long. That's my guesstimation of the facts in evidence. Okay. All right, but we do have a lot of show for you this week, to get you ready for the new year. We're not doing lists, because that's not how we roll. So no best of, worst of. Again, not how we roll.
That is totally how we roll.
It is how we roll. But
we just don't have our shit together.
Well, no, I think I stand by. If you want a list, we've already done the definitive list. Go look
that's
it up.
True.
The only list you will ever need. But moving right along, we have actual stuff to talk about in a super-packed random crap section. Segment. I'm going to say segment. Who wants to start it off?
I'll start.
Yay!
This is the only bit of random crap that I have, so I'll go
for it. Okay.
We have some viewer mail.
All right.
We got an email from Gamerman, who was congratulating us on 3 years of AVODs.
Have there been 3 years of AVODs?
Yeah.
I was not keeping track of this file.
Well, it's good that somebody was.
I guess this is episode, 145? So,
We weren't weekly, but we did start about 3 years ago.
We did start about 3 years ago, and it's episode 145. We've done, six special features, and we weren't weekly right at the start. So, yeah, I mean, that's 3 years. You know what? It was probably 3 years back in October now that I'm thinking about it. What really matters is when did the original Dead Space come out? Because that's what I was playing when we did the first episode. Or maybe the second episode. Not important, I guess. All right. But hey, thanks for reminding us of that. And we're glad you've listened to, 150 episodes of the AVOD.
Here's to 150 more.
Woo! All right. I also have some viewer mail. Our viewer Alexander let me know that in a video game, remember how I was discussing my fondness for characters who sidestep their way out of horror movies because it's the smart thing to do?
Yes.
Well, our viewer pointed out a video game where something like that happened. Apparently in video game No More Heroes 2, one of the protagonists, in coming up towards the final boss of the game, just says, you know what, this is too ridiculous. I'm done. And just leaves the game.
That's great.
Yeah, and I think that's a wonderful example. It doesn't exactly fit with what we're talking about, because No More Heroes is a comedy game that's about satirizing conventions. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that's the spirit in which that happens, but it's still a nice addendum for a list I'm making up of these characters.
There you go.
The people who are too smart to take part in horror movies. but anyway, thank you very much for pointing it out, Alexander. All right, now let's move on to me talking about things, because I have the next two pieces of random crap. First off, I just wanted to say something about my distaste for the television industry.
Okay.
Because I saw two very bad pieces of TV news this week.
Which are?
Okay, first off, there's a little show called Hell on Wheels. Now, I don't know if you've seen Hell on Wheels, but it's terrible. It's just what if Deadwood was made by very stupid people? That's Hell on Wheels. Just dumb, dumb, dumb. And you know what? Putting, Buffalo Bill in it, Ted Levine, for the first episode, that's not going to make me love you, okay? Made me like you briefly, but that's it. The point is, I found out that AMC is renewing it. And this, along with all the money they seem to be shoveling at Mad Men and The Dead Walking, is just kind of a slap in the face to everyone who likes good television, because monetary issues made it so the last two seasons of Breaking Bad are going to be having only 8 episodes each. Meanwhile, they can shovel apparently unlimited money to produce a terrible Western up in Alberta. So,
right.
I just wanted to go on the record saying, That's terrible, because I want more Breaking Bad and less shows about the world's nicest Confederate getting revenge for his wife's murder. Preposterous revenge.
I want to point out that you said the dead walking, so the Walking Dead.
Oh, sorry, the Walking Dead. I apologize. All right, but anyway, so yeah, and then again, just want to remind everybody, if you haven't watched Breaking Bad, I bought all of the DVDs over Christmas. Yeah, you should be really watching Breaking Bad, because bar none, it's the best show on television. All right, so that was my television comment, number one, number A. Number B, I'm going to say something that I never thought I'd say. It is a tragedy what happened to Criminal Minds' suspect behavior.
Oh my God.
No. Whoever thought I would say that, because I think as anyone who listened to the show at the first half of this year will remember, I hate that show. It is the worst thing on television. But I will say about this, it was energetically, entertainingly stupid. I had a good time watching it because it was terrible in every way a show could be terrible. And CBS killed it to order another season of a show so bland and forgettable, most people were not aware that it was on. CSI New York. So instead of giving them a chance to either improve or get even crazier and get into demonology the way it looked like they were going to for about 5 seconds on Criminal Minds suspect behavior, they brought us another season of CSI Miami. No one noticed that it was going to go away. No one knew it came back. And now they've taken it off the schedule towards cancellation after airing 8 new episodes. So they saved... They killed Criminal Minds to save this to immediately kill it again. God damn it, CBS. Why do you keep jerking me around like this?
But these are shows that you don't care about anyway.
Well, I was going to keep watching Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior.
Why would you torture yourself like that?
Because I'm putting together, well, now I'm putting together a booklet of them. But the point is, it's an ongoing project for how profiling is presented in fiction. I think I've been pretty open about that. It's not like I'm watching it just for fun. It's impossible to have fun watching Criminal Minds.
You're really the minority on that one.
I know. A lot of people have a lot of fun watching that terrible show. I'm not denying that. But anyway, let's move on from Criminal Minds, which I love, to a show that was also renewed.
American Horror Story.
Which, by the way, for the record, unless it somehow massively increases in viability as fiction in the next 3 episodes or 4 episodes, we're not going to be watching the second season of this. Okay? Can we just agree to that now?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Like, they would have to stunt cast the hell out of season 2. Like, I don't know who would have to move into the house with them to get me to watch next year, but no, it's just not going to happen. Honestly, that name probably doesn't exist. Lance Henriksen. There. Okay. So, let's move on to a discussion of episode 10. Was it 10 we watched or 9?
I didn't watch it.
What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this to me week in, week out?
This is only the second week that I've done it.
Week in, week out. There. So 2 weeks in that statement. All right. Okay, let me just quickly recap what happened on American Horror Story this week. It turned out that the mad doctor who lives in the basement.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I guess this is the first time we've seen evidence that he's a ghost, too.
It's just safe to assume that everybody's a ghost.
I know. Everybody.
Everyone.
Well, yeah, because Eric Close hadn't been there since we saw him die, and then suddenly he was there getting it on with the student as part of her twisted, self-destructive S&M games. So, yeah, he's kicking around the house, too. But anyway, in the 50s, when the Black Dahlia murder happened, it happened because she was going to the dentist who currently worked in the house to get her teeth done and offered to pay with sexual favors. And the dentist's preferred method of sexual favor was to drug women to unconsciousness and then rape their unconscious forms. He's an unpleasant man, is the point. So then he accidentally drugs her too long, and she dies, and he's like, oh my god, what am I going to do? And he freaks out a little. And so then the mad doctor shows up and is like, I have an idea. Let's cut her up in a preposterous way. That way no one will suspect you were the killer, because it had to be some, you know, twisted supernatural sex fiend. And that's how we had the Black Dahlia murder, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
Okay, good, yeah. And so that was the backstory from it. So yes, Betty Short is also a ghost in the house. Famous murder victim Betty Short is also a ghost in the house.
How many freaking ghosts are in this goddamn house?
Okay, literally hundreds at this point. Here's all that happened in the episode. Okay, Dylan McDermott discovered that the wife is carrying twins from two different fathers.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Which is... him and then the rubber man?
Yeah, well, we know that. Now, remember, his wife in the last episode I told you about was thrown into an insane asylum for saying that a man dressed up in the rubber man suit and, you know, raped her. And that's how she became pregnant. And he thought that was completely crazy, right? And now he finds out that she's having a baby by two partners. Now, any logical person would say, hey, maybe her rape story, you know, was true, right? Do you know what Dylan McDermott does?
What?
Goes to the hospital and accuses her of having a long-term affair with the security guy.
But they only just met him, and she was pregnant before they met.
But he says that when she came out to look for a house, they must have started having an affair, and it had all been a conspiracy.
Right.
So he confronts the security officer.
That makes perfect sense.
Like everything else on this show. It's just complete nonsense. So he confronts the security officer, who's like, yeah, I'm sterile, so no. And my wife and I have been trying to have kids forever. Doctors have said I'm sterile, so no. And
so how did they find out that she's pregnant by two different men?
Apparently they did. He wanted a paternity test or something.
Why?
I don't know. That's not important. that's not important to this. Like, questions aren't important to this show.
Oh my god.
So in addition to all
that... I understand why I stopped watching, right?
Please come back for the last three or four episodes with me, because I can't do this alone anymore. Come on.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is, in addition to all that nonsense I just talked about, one other thing did happen. The boyfriend next door, you know, Jessica Lange's boy toy, has been sleeping with the ghost of the college student, who he seemed to not know is a ghost. And he's in this weird position. Jessica Lange wants to adopt the Satan baby with him as the father, and he's feeling nervous because what about his career as an underwear model? It's all as preposterous as it sounds.
Wait, she wants to adopt a baby that hasn't been born yet.
Yeah, but she knows that the mother's in an insane asylum, and she's probably going to kill Dylan McDermott, so that baby is going to need parents.
Oh my god.
It's so hard to talk about this show. But anyway, and he's feeling nervous about that, so he's started having an affair with the ghost of the college student, who, when she finds out that he actually is in love with Jessica Lange and plans to raise the baby with her, murders him too, so now he's a ghost in the house.
Oh my god.
Desire to be famous is all connected when Betty Short shows up. And says, hey, why not have the doctor mutilate your body like mine was so that you can be a famous murder victim? Oh, it's just... Oh, and...
I'm just tired listening to
it. I know, it's so exhausting. Oh, and I forgot to say, the maid tried to, with Betty, like... Betty wanted help from the psychologist, who seemingly is not concerned that ghosts keep showing up for therapy. Mm-hmm. Like, doesn't notice this. But anyway, she wanted...
But does he believe in ghosts, or does he not believe in ghosts?
I don't think he believes in ghosts. It's hard to tell.
He thinks these are just real people showing up.
Yeah, like...
Don't they need appointments?
You'd think, right? But people keep showing up at his door. Oh, my God. And he's just like, oh, yeah, so you're another actress. Your insurance will take care of that, right? And so, yeah, it doesn't go well. But once again, more people try to slut him into staying in the house because he wants to get rid of the house, as we're all aware. And so none of that goes well. And everyone's unhappy at the end of the episode. Mom's in an insane asylum. I'm sure the kid's going to get born in time for the season finale. It's a complete mess that I can't believe was renewed, but apparently it got more viewers every week because people keep tuning in for the bizarre train wreck that is American Horror Story. But I have to hope, I have to pray, I have to believe that this is only going to be like a 2-season thing. Like, I can't imagine like that they can keep this story going for another year.
I actually ruined this show for somebody.
Really? How'd you do that?
I was talking to a friend of mine and he was saying how much he really enjoyed American Horror Story, and I said, oh my God, it's the worst thing I've ever seen. And he's like, why? And so I kind of, you know, aired my grievances.
And he's like, oh my
God. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. You totally just ruined that show for me.
Oh.
Good. Yeah. Good, I'm glad.
I know. I did that. My girlfriend was very angry because she walked out of the theater having had a good time with Superman Returns. Mm-hmm. And I spent like 2 weeks just doing nothing but hating that movie. She was very angry that she could never again watch that movie.
Because
I spent so much time talking about everything that was wrong with it. Although I maintain that I was right. All right, so now that we're done talking about the show that apparently only I, you know, have enough faith in our viewer to watch, let's move on to the actual movies we covered this week. Starring with The Boogeyman.
I don't think that's how you're supposed to say that word.
Yeah, but, you know, the guy who made the movie's, like, German, so who knows.
So no. That doesn't mean he doesn't know how to pronounce the word boogie.
I know. All right, go.
Okay, so our first film of the evening, as the count said, is The Boogeyman. Not to be confused with a Ghost House production, this The Boogeyman movie came out in 1980 and involves a murderous spirit caught inside a mirror. When Lacey breaks a mirror, she releases the spirit of her mother's violent and long-dead lover. Now free, the spirit sets about possessing some people and killing others. Will Lacey and her brother Willie finally come to terms with their past in order to defeat the evil presence? The answer is no.
In fact, I have a valuable lesson. I think each movie this week teaches a valuable lesson to people. And so I'm going to tell you what valuable lesson the first movie chooses, and remind me to do the other ones as well. Valuable lesson number one. If you even slightly suspect you might be living in a horror movie, do not attempt to come to terms with your troubled past. It can only end badly.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, like, this movie takes a really long time to get going.
Oh, my God. So much of it is like, so is the brother just going to be nuts now? Because it opens with the setup of Halloween.
Yes.
Quite openly, like, quite brazenly lifted from Halloween. With a twisted child abuse S&M undercurrent that was missing from the John Carpenter movie. But, you know, the director, writer, Uli Lommel, had to, you know, go his own way with it, and that's the way he went. But anyway, yeah, it's quite brazenly steals, and so you wonder, well, where's this going? And I honestly didn't know where it was going. I assumed after they have a scene where the brother, you know, almost murders someone for being attracted to him, I thought, oh, maybe it's going to go in that direction. But then that turns out not to have been important for the plot.
No, not at all.
Like, not even a little.
Yeah, so the brother kills their mother's abusive lover.
And according to Tommy,
apparently, like, we don't know what happens to the little kids. They're quite young when this happens. We don't know what happens to them after that. presumably they grew up in foster care, they're raised by like their aunt or something.
Yeah.
So now it's like 20 years later. Willie doesn't speak. He's mute. And I assume hasn't spoken since the night he killed his mother's lover. And Lacey seems to be pretty well adjusted. She's married to a cop, I think.
Yeah.
And has a little boy. And they all, they sort of all live together on a farm. And I don't even remember how or... Oh, no, she... What happens? Right, for some reason, she gets a letter from her mother. She and her brother are estranged from their mom. And she gets a letter from her mother saying how she'd like to visit with them again before she dies because she's quite old now. And Lacey wants to have nothing to do with her. And it's her husband who encourages her to, not necessarily to visit her mother, but to at least go back to her old house. To, I guess, sort of put the past behind her. Because I guess she has night terrors related to, her abusive past. And this is, so, like, I think it's, like, 40 minutes into the movie, they finally get to the old house.
I know.
And hanging in the master bedroom is the same mirror that hung in that room when she was a little kid, in which she watched her brother kill this guy.
Yeah.
And somehow his spirit ended up getting trapped in the mirror, and she goes insane, breaks the mirror, and it releases the spirit.
Well, releases the spirit, it enables him to... I mean, the spirit is still trapped in the mirror, but it enables him to have agency.
Yes, okay. That's a good way to describe it. Except his agency manifests in different ways, none of which make any sense.
No. Sometimes he can control objects. Sometimes he can control people. That's not a lot of consistency to what his powers work, why he's killing any particular people, what his motives are. Like, once the killer shows up, the film actually, you keep waiting for the killer to show up, because it is a horror movie, but the film largely, ceases making sense after he does.
Yeah, because then it's just, some random acts of violence. And then it's like, okay, well, they finally, the family realizes that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's got to do with this broken mirror, because after she breaks the mirror, she brings it. And puts it back together.
Yeah. Husband puts it back together because he thinks that will help.
They figure that, okay, all of this badness is rooted in the mirror. So maybe they should destroy the mirror So I think it ends up, she throws it down a well.
Yeah. Because it had been previously established, although she didn't know it, that water hurt the mirror.
Right.
Yeah. What? I didn't know why. Also, before really the mirror starts killing anybody, the brother starts having a real problem with mirrors. Like, he blames mirrors, but the thing is, mirrors were not an aspect of his life. Like, the only significance mirrors had before that was that she had watched her brother kill the guy in a mirror. The brother didn't have problems with mirrors. But the gorked out brother, despite he's going to paint over all the mirrors in the house for no reason.
Have you seen... This isn't a very fair comparison.
Okay.
But while I was watching this movie... I'm trying to think of, like, other similar films as a way to kind of describe the badness of
the boogeyman.
And the only thing that came to mind was Deathbed.
No, I haven't seen Deathbed. I've heard of Deathbed.
Deathbed's a very special film, and was made a few years before this one.
Okay.
But this movie shares similar qualities of Deathbed. Like, the ridiculous nature of the evil in the film is one thing. It's just awful, awful pacing is another.
Okay.
And it has this weird, weird kind of tone to it as well. So I guess if you haven't seen Deathbed, then this really, like, the comparison really doesn't make any sense.
I've lost
on me. At the same time, like, it's just, there's just something so strange about these two movies. And it's kind of hard to put your finger on exactly. Like, I don't think it's one element in particular. It's a combination of elements that combine to create a terrible movie.
Well, I think that what I was going to blame it on was I kind of feel like this is the epitome of the danger of having a writer director is that, you know, he made the whole movie without having a highly placed creative person to ask him what's going on here. Because I think it all made sense in Uli Lamel's head.
Yeah, he knew what was going on.
He knew what was going on and why these characters were doing these things and what the, you know, rules of his villain's powers work. But it didn't make it onto the screen at all. So, yeah, I think that was really, 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 really problematic. And that's the problem when you have a writer-director is you don't have another person there to say, wait, hold on. Why is he painting the mirrors black?
Yeah.
You know, why is the husband being such a dick about his wife's childhood trauma? You know? And yeah, the therapy stuff is just weird too. All right, so I think it's safe to say that people don't need to see the Boogeyman unless they're looking for something to put as a double feature with Deathbed.
Well, I would recommend this movie if you're having trouble sleeping. Because it did quite literally put me to sleep.
Oh.
I watched it in two parts.
Oh, that's so sad. Okay, let's move on to our second movie. And the first of our two, like, I didn't know the pedigree of either of these movies.
No.
We accidentally watched two Asylum movies this week.
I know. We didn't plan on that happening.
It kind of happened. Okay.
Oh, God. Okay, so our second movie of the evening is A Haunting in Salem, which we just found out made by the Asylum. And I'm going to assume was released in tandem with A Haunting in Connecticut.
That's all that makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Wayne Downs is the new sheriff in Salem, Massachusetts. He and his family move into a beautiful historic home, but their settling in doesn't go very smoothly. The sheriff is plagued by nightmares and his daughter falls ill. Could it have something to do with the fact that 19 women were found guilty of witchcraft on the same spot where the house now stands? Or is it just a coincidence that every town sheriff who's ever lived in that house has died along there with his family?
Sorry.
Yes, I
give
no.
A tip.
Those
it's...
are the answers to those questions.
I'm now going to give my second piece of important life advice that I learned from watching this film.
Okay.
All right. If you want to burn a house down, you don't have to put gasoline upstairs. Heat rises. You only have to put gasoline on the first floor and set it on fire, and the fire will deal with the upstairs. You don't have to worry about the upstairs. But at two different points in this movie, two different people wind up getting killed because they didn't just set a house on fire when they had more than ample opportunities to do so. So I thought that was a little puzzling that neither one of them knew how fire worked. But,
well,
hey.
That's a really kind of a lesser importance.
Oh, no, it is. But I just want to say, if you're trying to burn down, you know, a house with people in it, you don't have to specifically put gasoline all over the bodies you want to burn. Again, the fire will take care of that. It's a house fire. Let it burn. But anyway, let's continue. I assume you have myriad problems with the movie.
God, okay. So, the movie begins as this little prologue.
Yeah.
Which you only find out later in the film, is supposed to take place 40 years in the past. And very clearly was shot yesterday. So, it's, yeah. I had, because there's this prologue in which this man, this sheriff comes home to find his family dead in the house. And then he proceeds to try and burn it down, and it doesn't go very well. Cut to Sheriff Downs arriving at the house. And I'm, of course, believe that Sheriff Downs arriving is maybe a few months after this tragic event that we saw.
Really seemed that way, yeah.
In the prologue. And then you find out through a little bit of exposition that no one's lived in the house in 40 years. Like, really? I mean, I know the Asylum makes their movies on the cheap.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could at least do some post work to make it at least look like old film stock, even
just
if you don't.
Any kind of visual distinction between the two time periods would have helped.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be black and white or scratchy film or something, but just even a lighting change.
Exactly. Like,
back then they used incandescent bulbs. Now we use fluorescent. See, that's not hard. The color of light is so important. But anyway, continue.
So this is like how the movie starts, and so that's kind of where the problems begin. It's a one-location film, shot almost entirely in and around this one house. There is one scene that takes place in a park. And I would... This is going to be really mean.
Please.
But if I had to rate the script... It's like what a first year would write.
Oh.
Like, it's, you know, they've got an idea there.
Yeah.
They just haven't really fully developed it.
At all, no. And they haven't, like, they haven't exposed the logic of their premise to even the slightest bit of scrutiny. Because if 16 generations of sheriffs had all died mysteriously with their entire families in that house, mm-hmm. I feel like they would have noticed that that's a problem. Like, they might have seen that the house was the common denominator. And then, you know, for the entire time there wasn't a sheriff living in that house, you know, for that 40 years, the sheriff didn't die mysteriously.
Yeah.
And again, you feel like they would have noticed the connection between these two seemingly unrelated facts. But
yeah.
Apparently no one did.
That's never brought up.
No. And as I said, it's like, it's not even the slightest bit plausible.
And there's one character who's introduced early in the film who might have important knowledge. And he even suggests that he knows something more about the house and this property that will come in handy later on. But he ends up getting killed.
Pretty anticlimactically,
about 10 minutes after his introduction. So
I'm like, did he leave, like, diaries or something? Or are we going to find what he had written down or what he knew? No.
No, he's just taken out of the movie.
I know. And again, and the local sheriff, and that even though there is a long history of people on this property being brutally hanged, when he shows up hanging from a tree, everyone's like, well, I guess he just killed himself. You know, even though he had a horrible injury on his head pre being hanged from the tree. Because, you know, maybe he hit a branch on the way down, they assume. Because as if people go like 30 feet up into a tree and then dive down hanging from a piece of rope.
Yeah. And like the film heavily focuses on the sheriff.
Yeah.
Even though like the problems that he's experiencing his own problems because he's having these terrible nightmares. But his daughter is really the target of the spirits of these 19... witches.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, exacting their revenge. And she just sort of, she kind of comes and goes from the story. She's there, like she's a presence, but she's not enough of a presence, given the fact that she is the vehicle for the evil in this story.
Yeah, and again, it's weird that no one seems to be noticing that she's going mad.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff that's going on in their life is not so busy that they shouldn't be noticing that their daughter is clearly going mad.
No, and this is all supposed to happen within a week.
Yeah, that didn't really make sense to me either. Also, it had the effect that a surprising amount of these movies about post-Salem tend to have on me, which is it made me a lot less sympathetic towards the dead witches.
Why?
Well, because it seems like they actually were witches with evil powers. And I'm like, well, you know, if they actually were witches, I'm not so unhappy with them being hanged. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, see, my interpretation is that they might not have been witches. They were hanged, and now they're ghosts. They have ghost powers. So, really, you create an enemy.
Okay. You know what? That is definitely a possible interpretation. But you see why it gives me pause. Like, I remember there was this movie about a guy who, this woman had been turned, she was a local healer and witchy person. And she had been murdered because of a cover-up of a gay affair. It's not a good movie. I'm not going to get into the plot. But the point is, what it all came down to was then her like sons wanted to curse the town by making every single person in the town who had persecuted her and led to her death, you know, with a mystic spell, kill themselves. Like 20, 30,000 people, you know, a lot of people. And I'm like, you know, if she was walking around with that kind of ability, I'm not sure I have a problem with her being lynched. You know, I'm just saying that I don't know how comfortable I would be if it turned out the creepy guy who lived next door to me had a nuclear bomb in his garage. Okay? And that's the same way I feel about this, where it's like, you know, if witches can come back from the dead and, you know, enact brutal vengeance on people who had nothing to do with their deaths, I might have a slight problem with them when they were alive, too. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know. You don't know what these witches were like when they were alive.
No, I absolutely don't. Maybe they were just the nicest people in the world when they were alive, and they've only turned into crazy, vengeful monsters after. But you see why I would take from it that maybe they did have powers, which is kind of against the whole message of why the Salem witch trials were bad.
Well, again, because this isn't a very well-developed script. It's so open to interpretation.
More, I think, open to interpretation and readings than they were hoping. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So is there anything good we can say about this movie? Like, is there anything positive to say about a Haunting in Salem? Or The Haunting in Salem? What was it?
I think it's I don't even know. A Haunting in Salem.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because of A Haunting in Connecticut, right.
Yeah.
So is there anything positive we can say about this movie?
I don't really know if there is, to be perfectly honest. Like, even the Foley work is bad, okay? Did you notice that?
Whenever they're walking
around the house barefoot, it sounds like they're wearing boots.
I know. Yeah, there was no level of competence going on in this movie. Oh, it's very sad, really.
And I believe it was shot in Pasadena, so...
Oh, really? Well, it didn't look like Salem, Connecticut.
Well, this is it. Like, I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, it doesn't... I mean, not that I am overly familiar with New England's, foliage and ecosystem, or ecosphere, but... I'm like, that just doesn't look like Massachusetts to me.
No, it doesn't at all. And you know what? You're from Ottawa. You are kind of familiar with the Massachusetts biodome.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't think of the right word there.
No, you're very familiar with it. Biodome. I know. Biosphere, yes.
Biodome.
That's right. I'm thinking of the movie Biodome. Shut up. the biosphere here outside of Ottawa is really not that dissimilar to Salem, Massachusetts.
So I had an inkling that
that's not what it
was. So
no, you're absolutely right. It did not look authentic in the least. And maybe that's not their brand, but still, it was pretty egregious in this one.
It's a nice looking house, I'll give it that.
Nice looking house, but you know, is that the prime concern when you're making this kind of movie? Isn't coherence a bigger concern?
Coherence is a concern for any kind of movie.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, art films, I guess not. But other than art films, any kind of
movie. Yeah, but we're not talking about art films.
No, we're not talking about art films. Nor will we ever.
Ever, no.
Yeah. Well, not on this show, anyway. All right, so I think we're ready to move our third movie of the evening.
Yes, also the second Asylum feature in our unplanned Asylum film festival. Oh my god. Okay, third and final movie tonight is Dragon Crusaders. Just after the disbandment of the Templars, John the Brave and his knights are on their way somewhere. They stop to help a village under attack by pirates. Since no good deed goes unpunished, the knights are accidentally cursed by the girl they're trying to rescue. Now they've got to travel to the lair of the Black Dragon to lift the curse before they all turn into dragons themselves.
Okay. I'm going to... Can I tell you what the valuable lesson I learned from this movie was?
Please do.
You may have asked in the past, can the power of love defeat gargoylification? The answer is yes.
See, okay, well, we'll start right there. In the movie, they call them gargoyles.
Yeah.
They're dragons.
They're clearly small dragons.
Yes, but I guess back in, well, if they've just been disbanded, it would be around 1312. I guess back then they called small dragons gargoyles.
Maybe. I mean, I have no idea what the English language was like back then. But I do know something. There is no place less likely to have a lookout, apparently, than a walled city. I mean, sure, our city has walls, but it's not like we have to watch them or anything. Like, literally, pirates walk up to the city they want to sack and just start sacking it. And there is no defense, really, of any kind. I enjoyed that quite a bit. Why did you even put walls on your city, then? Of course, there's the walled city with no defenses, and then the broadest possible interpretation of the word village I have ever encountered. We're going to my village! Oh, you mean those two lean-tos? Is that the village you're talking about? The two lean-tos at the bottom of this gravel pit? I know they don't care that much for, you know, spending money over at the asylum. But this was egregious even for them.
Well, they blew it on their CG budget, I guess.
And I gotta give them this. They had a lot of CG dragons in this.
Yes, there were an awful lot of CG. See, like, the film started, I'm like, oh, this has got potential.
Yeah.
It begins with a girl being chased by a dragon. And I'm like, oh, see, this is what Reign of Fire should have been.
Yeah.
Because that's my one complaint about Reign of Fire, was that for a movie about dragons, there weren't any dragons.
I know.
But then, of course,
it stopped being about dragons.
We got this prolonged pirate attack, and then we've got these knights and no dragons for a good long time.
Let's not forget the brief point at which zombies show up.
Okay, so let's, in keeping with our theme of shit that doesn't make sense. So this girl, she curses. Let me describe this quickly.
I just want to describe this quickly, because... I love the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but there's one part of it that never made sense. That they had the worst curse ever put on into fiction, which is, this evil vampire we will curse by giving him a conscience and make him feel bad about his sins. Unless he ever gets happy again, in which case, he'll become a super evil, powerful, conscienceless vampire again.
Soulless.
Well, he also had no conscience, but anyway, soulless vampire. And I'm like, that doesn't really make sense as a punishment. And I never thought I would see a curse that made less sense than that until I saw a movie where a woman, and I'll just describe the curse, who was kidnapped by pirates who were going to kill her. She puts a curse that anyone evil within the radius of where she was kidnapped would turn into a dragon. And I'm not saying she wasn't threatened by pirates. That is bad. Do you know what I would less like to be threatened by?
Dragons.
Well, no,
here's what I didn't understand.
I've been rescued from the spiders who were attacking me. I used a spell to turn them all into wolves.
No, here's what I don't understand. So she curses the pirate ship, basically, is what happens. So anyone who sets foot on this ship has this curse upon them. And she says that the curse is supposed to turn, anyone with any evil in them will turn into a gargoyle at some point. It's unclear exactly when. It depends on how much evil is in you. But it also seems to raise the dead.
I know.
So the terms of this curse are a little unclear to me. All the pirates who were murdered by the Templars, by the Knights, come back as zombies?
Even though
one.
They weren't cursed.
I don't understand.
Because they weren't on the ship.
No, but all the pirates came from the ship. Where else did the pirates come from?
Oh, no, but I'm saying the pirates who were killed by the Templars in the city, but she didn't cast the curse when she was in the city. She cast it when she was on the ship, and then the pirates who were currently on the ship were turned into gargoyles.
No, but the pirates come back from the dead. At one point, there were zombies walking around, and they got a fight.
I know. No, I know, but that's the part that didn't make sense to me. Like, I understood when a Templar under the curse died, I could kind of say, okay, he was under the curse, so after dying, because he died before he got turned into a dragon, he came back as a zombie. I could kind of accept that. But the pirates who were already dead in the city before the curse was written, why did they turn into zombies? That's what I didn't understand. And I don't know why I'm asking you for an explanation of this. But yeah, consistency is not a watchword this film, you know, was careful to keep track of.
And then they say the only way... Okay, so they have this curse upon them.
Yeah.
And they go visit some witches for some reason. I don't know. To try and lift the curse, I guess, but it doesn't work.
Nope.
And so they find out that the only way to break the curse is to kill the person who... cursed them.
Yeah.
Which is this girl. But they don't want to do that, so they decide they're going to go to the lair of the Black Dragon. See, the Black Dragon.
Yeah.
To try and get him to lift the curse, because the curse came out of his grimoire.
Well, and he's the one who taught her how to do spells.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
She was his apprentice.
Was that what they said? Okay, I...
That's what they were saying. She was the one who was taken from the town to...
So, So then, who is the guy who follows them and attacks them periodically over the course of this movie?
I have no idea. I was watching closely.
I thought he might have been the apprentice.
No, I'm pretty sure she's the apprentice, because that's how she knew all the spells and had the grimoire, because she had run off.
Who the fuck is this other guy?
Oh.
Dogging them.
Yeah, because they're being chased by a dark knight for like half of the movie. And they have to get into a sword fight with him and have a climactic battle. And I'm like...
He can control dragons.
Yes. But he's not the king of the dragons, who has gotten rid of his physical body and put his mind into the biggest, scariest dragon.
Yes.
Yeah, this was a needlessly convoluted film.
God!
Although, to be fair, it was less convoluted than Season of the Witch.
Oh, don't even get me started.
I know. I didn't want to. I just wanted to bring up that it could have been worse.
Okay, so another point I want to make.
Please.
So, you recall, like, 20 minutes ago when we talked about the prologue to A Haunting in Salem that was supposed to take place 40 years ago, and looks like it took place last week.
Yes.
Okay, so this movie, Dragon Crusaders, presumably set in the early 14th century.
Yeah.
The ship that the pirates are sailing, their pirate ship, is an 19th century vessel.
I was going to ask you
looking at it. Like, it is, they are so off. And like, okay, they had access to a tall ship, that's cool, except they're sailing a boat from the 1800s, and this is supposed to take place in the 1300s.
I had a feeling that was not at all accurate and was just like a tourist location that was sitting in whatever country this was shot in.
No, they were shot in Wales.
A whale. Oh, they shot another one in Wales.
Yeah.
Oh, good for them having like a thing in Wales going on. Hey, just between this and Sherlock Holmes, way to go. But okay, that totally explains why there would be a tourist ship lying around. I was also going to say, the problem with setting something in the 13th century and using an actual medieval city. 14th century and using an actual medieval city is that in the 14th century, the city did not look decrepit and run down.
Yeah, it's same with that abbey that they were hanging out at.
I'm like, you know those buildings were all new then, right? Like the stone. We don't think of it much now, but there was a time when all of that stone was like very crisp and clean looking and not weathered by 800 years of rain.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was that. I'm like, you know, you could have played with it a little, guys. Oh yeah, but yeah, again, they had a location, they went with the location, and I think that's as far as they thought about it.
Well, it just like, again, I understand making movies on the cheap, but yeah. You have to like, yeah, I mean, you like, you don't know anything about maritime history. Oh. And even you could tell that that ship just didn't belong in that time.
Well, no, there's no way. I've seen the kind of pictures of the kind of the boats they used to go to the Crusades. Those things are, you know, ridiculous compared to this thing. So, yeah, I was not impressed by that at all. Like, those boats were designed to go, you know, a little ways from Iceland to Iceland to England and from the Mediterranean, you know, just to cross the Mediterranean. They did not have those kinds of ships back then. And, yeah, I gotta say, I was ill-impressed by the film. But, to be fair, it did have the heartwarming message that the power of love can conquer gargoyleization. So I did actually.
It felt like that sort of love story angle between the girl, and one of the knights. Total afterthought,
but less tacked on than the identical love story from the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Which I didn't see.
Oh, okay. Well, continue not having seen that movie. All right, but the weird part is the film is so slapdash and so, you know, hastily put together and so not thought through. The fact that they're like, oh, and now there's a love story. I made the conscious decision to be like, you know what? I'm going to be heartwarmed by this love story. As long as this love story has a happy ending, I'm going to choose to be heartwarmed by it. And it's like, I elected to find something to like about this movie. And that's what it was.
I mean, I enjoyed this movie more than A Haunting in Salem.
Oh god, it was way better than A Haunting in Salem.
It's a much better movie, in spite of the fact that it's, as you say, slapdash and...
It is a very slapdash endeavor. It is one-take filmmaking, quite clearly.
But, I mean, they have, you know, choreographed fight scenes. They have this warrior woman character for no reason.
Yeah, who doesn't really make sense. But, you know,
make a whole lot of sense. And the Templars seem to know her, and she knows them. And
yeah,
also, the Templars don't seem to have a really big problem with sorcery and magic.
Well, that might be why they were kicked out of the church.
Well, not these guys in particular. Like, the whole order. This is just after
their excommunication disbanded.
Yeah. Shut down the order.
Yeah, because, he wanted to steal all their money. But you know what? That's a story for another time. And a much better movie.
And I think they misidentify their king in this movie.
I feel like they did, but I'm not so great with the Crusades that I could say that for sure.
Well, no, I know it was definitely a Philip. I don't know which one. But I think they say King Edward in the movie.
Ah, okay. There you go.
Like, really misidentify them.
That's a pretty bad misidentification. Oh, yeah. It was not the clearest, but at the same time, you know what? There were Templars. They were fighting gargoyles and or dragons. It aimed high. And you know what? The action was more because they didn't have that good filmmaking. They weren't able to afford shaky cam. So
so they had to make sure their action was...
Well, the thing is, the action all had the flavor of... We don't have a lot of really talented stunt people or the time we would need to make a really good fight scene. So you had a lot of people being overly careful with their prop weapons.
Well, she did okay, the warrior woman.
She did do okay, absolutely.
A lot of posing.
Oh my god. Well, I'd say that was what I was getting at, was that it was more posing than fighting.
But the guy who plays John the Brave, I guess the lead Templar, he's a horse trainer.
Really?
And actor.
Well,
yes.
Good, because he seemed pretty comfortable with the horses, so he waited. No, and the thing is, I'm not complaining about the fighting. It looks better than the fighting in a lot of movies I've seen recently. So I don't mean to insult it. I'm just saying you could totally see that even the fighting was kind of on the cheap.
Yeah.
But no, overall, like, we watch a surprisingly large number of Asylum movies here, and... This is definitely in the top tier of Asylum movies I've seen.
Well, I guess I've forgotten a lot of the Asylum movies we watched, but good. I would have to say that the Asylum movies from Wales, way better than the Asylum movies
from California.
From States, yeah.
Oh my god, you're right. It's not even close. So yeah, whoever is making these Asylum movies in Wales, maybe just get your own company, you know? Maybe, I don't think the Asylum name is doing you any favors. All right, so do we have any narcissism to watch?
I don't. I will be posting in the near future my end of year best and worst of list.
Yay!
So yeah, keep an eye open for that.
Oh, that's it? Okay. I don't really have any narcissism to watch either. It's the holidays, so I'm not doing anything. So look for me to do more stuff in the new year. Although I did post my Christmas Day greatest comic book story ever. Did you happen to take a look at that, Dive Mistress?
No. I worked Christmas Day.
I know, but it's been up since then.
And yesterday.
Okay. Accept your apology. But anyway, the point is, I posted that, and I'll be posting my New Year's story as well. My New Year's story is actually very important because it has a disturbing environmental message.
Oh, okay.
So, and it's weirdly prescient about, how shall I put this, a certain environmental ailment of our age, and then the conclusion it comes to afterwards is very disturbing. And that's all I'm going to say to tease that one out. But yeah, it's basically like it was written for Al Gore just after he was born.
Weird.
It's very weird, and I think people are going to enjoy it. So from here, you can find that at Vargelon.com, in case you're wondering.
Zombus.net for the year-end best and worst of.
But I think it's also important to point out that after this episode, we're going to be taking a brief hiatus in recording, during which we take some much-needed time off. And then we're going to be... don't worry, we are going to be posting new content during that time, but it's not going to be stuff we currently record. So if something major happens in the horror world, we're not going to be covering it for like 2-3 weeks. Because if there's one time that major stuff happens in the horror world, it's in the weeks between Sorry. Okay. I'm not even going to finish that stupid sentence. But the point I'm getting at is we're going to take these couple of weeks to watch all of the movies that are currently hot in theaters and discuss what should be on our year-end list. So join us at the beginning of January, or I guess really midway through January, for a look back and a year look forward with the AVOD.
You almost managed to get through that without screwing up.
I know! It was so close! Alright. Do we have poll results, Dive Mistress?
We have poll results, yes. Last week's poll was, is the notion of a holiday tree really as offensive as I, DM, claim? And some of you think that I just need to lighten up. But the majority of you agree that yes, a holiday tree is kind of stupid.
You know what? I am completely on board with you on this one. I am now a willful combatant in the war on Christmas.
That's not what I want.
I know. it is pretty stupid though. All right, so let's move on. I've already told you where to find my stuff. Did we tell them where to email us?
Yes, send us an email to avod@gmail.com.
Okay, so until many, many next times from now, I'm Count Fargelon.
I'm DM.
Thanks for watching, and have yourselves a great new year.
Good night.